cannot be serious!
Okay, now we've just got about 5 minutes before we ring Ben Fordham. We've had to put him back. No one would know that, but we've had to put him back because we've spoken to our guest Simon Madden, which would be pretty obvious if you've been listening to this. So quickly, before we ring Ben, there was a couple of items that we were going to chat about. Max, what was one of them?
Greg Norman is in a fair bit of strife, is he not, with his Saudi deal with the new golf?
Yes, he's a breakaway group from the PGA, and I don't think he's flavour of the month over there, Greg. I'm not sure where that's headed, but I noticed Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau was offered $350 million to break away from the tour and play in this new group the Saudi have inaugurated.
I know nothing about golf, but is this similar to what Packer tried to do? Or similar. Can we relate? Or, you know, is it a similar problem that exists in golf now that existed in cricket back in the 70s?
It's a similar thing, and maybe Greg got the idea from Mr. Packer, but who knows? But I don't think it's probably going to work because it's a huge infrastructure to overthrow the PGA, who give a tremendous amount of money put into the Provident Fund for the players, and they can live on that for the rest of their lives because they take most of their earnings and do it on their behalf,
But Phil has quit. I can't say his last name properly. He's quit.
Phil Mickelson has quit the Norman Tour.
He's quit the PGA Championship.
Oh, yeah. So he's gone to the tour. Yes.
Well, it's no different. It's all relative. I mean, Packer took on the cricket world establishment.
Righto. Now, put your earphones on. I'm going to have a keep talking until I'm going to try and ring Mr. Fordham and see how we go here. So we're just going to go through the whole charade of trying to get it to come on air for a start.
Well, it's not a charade, it's a fact.
Mm. So here we go, we're ringing. And we will... the doc has been training his little...
Morning, boys.
Doc! Now, can you hear him?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, if we can, it's just working beautifully. Now, I just said you got the little nipper out at ballet training. How is she going, the two-year-old?
Mate, she's going very well. She's 2 years of age. Her name is Marigold.
Your daughter's called Marigold?
Yeah, Goldie, Marigold.
And mackerel.
Mate, they have this thing called Just Dance, where when you're too young to do ballet or whatever, you go along and do this thing called Just Dance. And I promised her I'd be here this morning, and then the lovely instructor just said to me, "Oh, I'm sorry, but because it's her third lesson, parents can only be here to watch the first two." And I very politely explained to the lady that this was my first visit to Just Dance, and I would very much appreciate being able to stay here to watch my daughter. So so she relented, and I'm just keeping an eye on her from a distance.
Well, I'm very sorry.
Very sorry
we've had to put you back because our other guest, Simon Madden, who spoke tremendously about AFL football. So we appreciate you holding you over, Doc.
No, gentlemen. And how's Don today?
Well, Doc, I'm concerned. Mad. I'm more concerned about you. Because I know you've used this podcast, and it's certainly you're taking benefit from it because of the fact that you got access to that high security jail, Goulburn Jail, which no one else has done. But obviously your profile has really come to the soaring since you've been on this podcast. But I'm also a little bit worried about how you're feeling today, being relegated, being number one to number two.
Let me first of all address the jail visit. There's a few of the inmates who say good day, by the way, Don.
So, thanks.
I said I'd pass on their best wishes to you. Yeah, I went inside to what we call Supermax Prison in New South Wales, which is the worst of the worst. It was set up for terrorists, but now, you know, when you got serial killers like Ivan Milat, the backpacker killer, that's the real Ivan Milat, not the Ivan Milat previously associated with the You Can't
Be Serious
podcast.
He was very chuffed. He was very chuffed to get the memo about you visiting Ivan Milat's cell. This is Paul, who Don called Ivan. Yes, go ahead.
But I'll tell you what, it's a crazy place. I mean, these guys get locked up for 23 hours a day in their own little cell. They're not allowed any other contact, because what they were finding is that when you put criminals, bad criminals, into a prison with people who are extremists, people who want to, you know, attack our country, people who want to plan terror attacks, then it's essentially becoming a recruitment office. So in New South Wales, about 20 years ago, they said, well, look, the best thing to do is to keep all of these people separate so you don't get any contact. You know, you get a TV set, you get a newspaper, and you get some pre-prepared meals. But apart from that, there's no workshop. There's no kind of special exercise yard where you can hang out with other people and exercise and chat. You're locked in there 23 hours a day in the cell.
But that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, it's been very successful at breaking up some of those terror networks, because what was happening, if you've got someone who's locked up as a terrorist for 25, 30 years, they've got nothing to do inside. So what do? They find young blokes who come in there, and then they brainwash them to convince them that when you get out in 5 years, you should carry out a terror attack, and we can link you up with some of our mates on the outside. So they're just doing this in the UK now, and it's, you know, 20-something years after we started doing it in New South Wales, and it's been very successful in stopping these terror masterminds at being able to communicate. But then you've got other people who are just absolute scumbags, rolled gold scumbags, like, you know, serial rapists and serial killers. So they toss them in there and they say, good night, we don't want to hear from you again.
So you've been doing a little of what Louis Theroux has been doing over in the States by visiting...
Yeah, Louis, how good's Louis, doesn't he do a great job?
He does.
Although Louis, see, in the United States, they allow the media to talk to the inmates, you know, because it's just so free and easy over there, and that's part of the reason why we love the US, because they let you go in, they let you talk to the prisoners, but there was none of that going on with me. They kept me away from the inmates in there, yeah, because also that would be seen as a reward, you know. For some of these lunatics, all of a sudden you've got a camera crew there and you're able to talk to the media, all of a sudden you get some kind of star power, so they don't want any of that. They want them essentially to keep breathing, keep eating, keep drinking, but apart from that, not have an avenue, not have a platform, and not have a social setting to be able to communicate with people. So, mate, it's a pretty bloody amazing facility, I've got to say.
Could I ask you something on a personal basis, Ben?
I hope that we're close enough to be able to have these conversations, Don.
Well, Marigold... Was it a free and easy state that you and your wife were in when you named it? Because that name takes me back to the 60s, the flower power, the hippies and all the rest of it, and substance abuse.
Fair dinkum. That's a stretch.
I mean, feel free to make these allegations against me, but to say that about my wife, right? What are you suggesting?
I'm not making an allegation. I'm asking a question.
Well,
had you been on the Bolivian booger sugar when you actually thought of the name Marigold, I think is what Don's saying.
No, I can tell you what happened, Don. We just love old names. When we named Freddie, I was reading back through a list of Anzacs, and I was doing it for my radio show. It must have been around Anzac Day, and I was reading some of these stories about, you know, some of our great soldiers who fought in Gallipoli, and I saw a soldier called Freddie. I thought, oh, Freddie, boy, that's a good one. And then when Pearl came along, I think that was just one of those names that when Pearl was born, the lady at the hospital who was part of the delivery process, she said, oh, I haven't had a Pearl in here in about 40 years. And so we love those old names.
And had a Pearl Marigold necklace.
Oh. Yeah, Marigold. There's just something about Marigold that I think is a... You know, I like those old school names.
What about Gladys or Doris or Beryl? What about those?
Ruth.
Well,
Yvonne.
Gladys, I reckon, will take off as a name because of the popularity of the New South Wales Premier former New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
That's funny. It's funny, Ben, when you talked about, and I think that's got a lot of merit, you talked about World War One, and you came up with the name Freddie, I immediately thought of Simpson and his donkey, and I think his donkey was named Freddie.
Well, I didn't know that Simpson's donkey was named Freddie, but anyway, we'll run with that.
Neither do I.
Now, listen, Andrew Simons, I don't know whether you've spoken about Andrew Simons. Did you guys get to meet him at any point over the years?
I didn't. So go on, speak about him, please.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have the pleasure either, but I'll tell you what, he's obviously a great mate of Warnie's, and another one of those situations that, when someone passes away like that, you hear all sorts of wonderful yarns about how fantastic they were. I heard a good one the other day, actually, listening to a podcast for Marty Sheargold on Triple M there in Melbourne. I was listening to his podcast, and one of his listeners sent in a message just saying that that they're at the rugby league a few years ago, and all of a sudden Andrew Simons walked into the box. They decided, him and his mates decided to splurge out on a corporate box, and then all of a sudden Andrew Simons walked in and said, "Hey boys, I'm sorry to barge in here, but have you got any beers?" And then sat down with them and had 2 hours watching the footy together, telling some great yarns about, being on tour with the Australian cricket team. So he just seems like a lovely bloke. And boy, hasn't cricket had some shockers, with Rod Marsh and Warnie and now Andrew Simons. So, yeah, just really feel for his poor family, 2 little kids.
This is a generic thing, a generic observation. But, Ben, what do you think about people having... well, in Warne's case, it's the MCG stand named after him, and it also mooted that Andrew Simons should have something or a stand named after him. Why aren't people recognised when they're alive?
Well, because there are so many impressive people out there, Don, that you can't...
But why is it death? Why does death, and they could not enjoy the fact or being recognised by having... an institution or something done after, after they're dead. They're not alive to appreciate how they're felt by the general public.
Well, I think he was, and I think I'd push back on that to say that I think that everywhere he went, he would have felt the appreciation for the people around him.
Yeah, but it's a bigger accolade, for you, for example. If you had some, put yourself in that situation, there might be something named after you when you're gone. Yeah. Wouldn't you like that accolade to be afforded to you whilst you're alive so you'd appreciate it?
It's not appropriate to name stands and things after people while they're alive. That's you walk round... the stand is named after Shane. He's walking around in the public arena alive. It's best to name it when they're gone.
I think I'd prefer people saying... "G'day, mate. Well done, mate. Nice to meet you," and having a beer with people and having a chat with people when I'm still here, rather than those things happening afterwards. And there's only so many stands and so many public parks and town halls and school halls that you can name after people. And I don't know. I think it's nice, the fact that, mate, if you're as well respected as he was, and you drive around Townsville and people yell out, "G'day, Roy," or "Let's go and have a beer," or "Can I have a photo with you?" Or "Can I have your autograph?" I think that's a pretty good sign that people like you and respect you. And I don't know, is there a Sam Newman stand or Sam Newman public school that's been created in Melbourne yet?
Well, there probably will be.
There's a pole in the local strip club.
No, well, there will be something at the college.
That's my son that said that.
A grammar, isn't it?
Max who said there's a pole in a strip club named after me. Max, stand aside, son, or I'll swat you down.
No, Max. Hey, can I say g'day to Max?
Yes.
Hey, Max.
Hey, Ben, how you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. What are you taking over there now, are you?
I'm the third leg at the moment.
We got him in because we speak about sport with him, because he's the only person up to speed with the AFL. We know nothing about it, so Max comes in and adds some credibility to the AFL if we speak about it.
Now, well, Max, I think the two of us should get our heads together and think, we're not going to have Don and Sam with us forever, and we should probably be thinking now how's an appropriate way that we can have these two honoured going forward in the long term. And I don't know, would it be okay to have a Sam Newman primary school that would be created, or a
latrine block?
I don't know.
I don't know, something.
And if you're looking at Dad, you could name a marina after him. I think the boat. And if you had Don, you could
name a horse
shovel
after
or
a horse Ben, park. Doc, before...
Mate, I think you're onto something there. Imagine the Don Scott Equestrian Centre of Melbourne.
Oh. There's already been one.
There's already been one.
So, Doc, before you have to ring off and attend to the little nipper and Jody and all that, Don has an interesting statistic. We are the most, per capita of the population, we have the most COVID, people have contracted COVID the most in the world in this state, Don. Is that correct?
Well, states, the state we live in, Ben, figures behind New South Wales, but per head of population, as John said, there's been 2,500 to round it off cases in New South Wales, and deaths have been nearly 3,000. Victoria, 1.3 million, and there's been nearly 3,000 deaths, just over 3,000 deaths.
Highest number in the world per capita.
But you know what? It's interesting at the moment. There's a lot of people getting COVID at the moment, and there's a lot of people sadly passing away from COVID at the moment. But guess what? In Australia, we have a lot of people who die from sun cancer. We have a lot of people who die from heart disease. We have a lot of people who die from a whole range of things. And we're finally, in mid-2022, accepting the fact that COVID is just another killer. Yes, it's tragic when someone passes away from it, but whether you die in a road accident or whether you die because you've had some kind of cancer that sadly inflicted your body, whether it's Alzheimer's or dementia or many other things that happen, all we've got is just one other thing that's added to the list. And yes, initially when we didn't know much about it, we did everything we could to prevent it. But mate, I don't know about you guys, but I just want to move on. Like, I'm going overseas in a few months and I'm flying on Qantas. And at the moment, I'm going to have to wear a mask on that plane going overseas. But if you're flying on an American airline out of Australia, the moment you're out of Australian airspace, it's masks off. You know?
Yeah, but hang on, mate. Hang on, Ben. What are you going to do yourself? Wear a mask or not wear a mask? What do you think?
I don't want to wear a mask.
Okay, my choice would be, if I was in your situation, I would wear a mask, because you're in an air-conditioned unit that just recycles air or whatever else. And so I personally, no matter what flight I'd fly on, I'd wear a mask.
You're going to wear a mask for
12
hours.
It's 9 hours.
Well, I would certainly do that, Ben. That's your choice. I am a little bit paranoid about COVID. I would wear a mask.
They said the airlines recycle the air cleaner and more appropriately than they do in a surgical medical room in an operating theatre.
Yeah, I mean, but it comes down to choices and weighing up risk. And even if there's an increased chance of me catching COVID on the plane, I'm sorry, this might sound really naive, but I would rather be mask-free for 9 hours and enjoying myself on the flight for 9 hours. And if I get the bloody virus, I'll deal with it when I get it. I mean, I'm just one of these people. I can't handle wearing the things. I absolutely detest them, and I love freedom of choice. When I jump into a taxi or an Uber and the driver has a mask on, I say straight away, hey, mate, you don't have to wear the mask if you don't want. I'm okay with it. Because I don't want to wear one in the back, so I don't expect them to wear one in the front. And I know when I get in that cab or that Uber that there's a chance that the person might have it and they might pass it on to me. And I get into that cab or that Uber understanding that risk, but I want to get on with my bloody life.
Now, Doc, I believe the election is on the weekend, isn't it, or not?
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. It's on Saturday.
So come on, give
Saturday.
Us your prognostication that we can replay this next week.
All right. Well, I've always said that ScoMo is a fierce campaigner and he can't be underestimated. But, you know, about a year or so ago, I remember saying on radio one morning, I said, I think Scott Morrison's got trust issues. And I think one of the problems is he so often has to be dragged kicking and screaming to the truth. And I think that has been a real problem for him, that he's got issues there, that his personal trust issues have diminished rapidly. And I think that's partly because instead of just saying, yeah, I stuffed that thing up, sometimes it takes him 10 times around the block until he can finally concede that. But then Anthony Albanese came out on his first day of the election campaign, didn't know the jobless rate, didn't know the cash rate. A few weeks after that, didn't know his six-point plan on the NDIS. I think he's had a really poor campaign, Anthony Albanese. And then in the last 24 hours, did the bolt from all of these journalists in Western Australia when they're asking him questions about the policy costings. Who's going to win now? I noticed when he was on with Lee Sales on the 7:30 report this week, I saw something in Scott Morrison that told me that he thinks he's going to win. It was a level of confidence I didn't see him displaying a week earlier. So I would never write him off. And I'd say that the coalition will probably do better in Queensland and New South Wales. Anthony Albanese will do better in places like Victoria and Western Australia. And I think if you were going to bet on something, I wouldn't be too concerned about the possibility of a hung parliament, as in I'd be concerned about it because a hung parliament's going to be pretty tough for Australia to deal with. But I'd say there's a strong chance of a hung parliament. You know, I wouldn't bet against ScoMo, but then again, you'd have to say the favourite is Albo. So if you want to accuse me of sitting on the fence with splinters in my backside, then I'd be guilty as charged, because anyone who says they know what's going to happen this weekend is full of BS. But I will say this. I've watched Scott Morrison for a long, long time. I've seen him up close and I've seen him from a distance. And I saw something in him this week that I haven't seen in the previous 5 weeks of the campaign. And that was a winning feeling and a level of confidence. So I know one thing. Scott Morrison thinks he's going to win this weekend.
Well, I know who's going to win, and I'm not sitting on the fence. Albanese Anal will win with a leg in the air, much to my chagrin and my disappointment.
And stepping back and looking in from outside, I think a lot of them leave a lot to be desired. Internationally, they are so far behind some of the other representatives in this world.
Oh, what, Joe and Kamala?
Anyway, and I also will go on and say, I think you've read it a bit wrong. In Victoria, I think the people are really pissed off with Labor in Victoria, all I know, with Andrews. Yeah. And it was interesting that Andrews was brought up, you know, why haven't you been out on the campaign trail with Albanese? Oh, the excuse was we had a budget to prepare. He was there front and centre the next day or a day later, and they recognised that, and out they trotted Andrews. The Labor Party is very embarrassed about Andrews in Victoria.
Ben, can I ask a question?
Well, I'll give you one final little nugget. I had a conversation with Anthony Albanese maybe 3 months ago. Off air, and I said, "What
well,
did you
should
lose?
You should
shut
you
shut up, Don?
Should
let him
you report
say this.
It if it's off air?
Shut up!
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, he would make clear. Politicians would make clear if they said, yeah, off the record. And if you say off the record, then it's off the record. But I just asked him straight, and he didn't ask me to agree to keep it off the record. I just said, now listen, what if you lose? I said, if you lose, you'll probably be able to have another shot at it. And he said, no. If I lose, that's it. And I would just say to both Scott Morrison and Anthony Albanese, because I know that they'll be listening to this podcast right now, they've got nothing better to do. Whoever loses has to retire immediately from politics, whether it's Scott Morrison or Anthony Albanese. The leader has to bow out and step out of the way. Albo's already told me off air that that's what he would do. And I would very much presume that Scott Morrison would do the same if he suffers the same fate. They've got to get out of the way and give someone else a go. And it's also going to be interesting watching some of these other parties that have come along. You know, like some of these Climate 200 candidates. I'll just say this about them. They are getting a lot of attention at the moment, and they'll probably gain a lot of votes because there's so much dead wood, so many spineless weasels in Canberra from the Labor Party and the Liberal Party.
Feckless.
They've got very little talent. Wouldn't survive for 5 minutes in the real world running a business. And that's why you've got Simon Holmes, the court, who's managed to come along, pick some impressive women who've got backstories. They've been successful in their own lives as solicitors and doctors and paediatricians, and they know how to communicate. He's put them up, and they're probably going to gain a lot of traction, including putting Josh Frydenberg under a bit of pressure in Kooyong. And I think that sends a message to the major parties that if you continue to serve up these mediocre MPs, then it's going to be easy for someone else to come along and steal their seat.
Doc, here's Max just very quickly. He wants to ask you something.
Just quickly about Scott Morrison showing confidence this past week that you've noticed a difference in. I would have thought that new policy that he was trying to bring in terms of superannuation, getting put to buying a first house or something along the lines, I got to admit, I don't know too much about politics, but that was seen by a lot as being a desperate last attempt measure at trying to win back some more people. Isn't that ridiculous, trying to get into your superannuation early and hinder your retirement?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, there's arguments either way on that one, Max, but he thinks it's a winner. Scott Morrison thinks it's a winner. Politics is about being in power.
What do you think? If you're in a first home buyer situation...
I would much rather get a home and a house over my head, a roof over my head, than worry about what savings I'm going to have in retirement. And the way the policy works, Max, is that when you buy the house using your superannuation, when you sell the house, the gains you make out of that house sale have to go back into your superannuation and back into your retirement.
But what about if you don't sell it? What about if that's your dream home? That's it. You're holding up there with your family and everything.
Well, the greatest way out of poverty and desperation is having a house to live in and not having a landlord you've got to pay rent to.
Living on the boulevard in on a mattress in the great yes.
How is Cynthia? Is she well?
No, her name's Melanie. We've had someone chat to her and she said she's saving to buy an apartment and she's been there for 16 months and she's
to getting to know Melanie every day. And Melanie, I'm looking forward to meeting you when I'm in Melbourne. Boys, I've got to run.
Good on you, Doc. See you, star, Doc.
Max, lovely talking to you, Max. I'm looking forward to catching up.
Good boy. Good. All the best, Doc.
On your lad.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I believe he's off. We'll say he's off, won't we? Now, that's the doc. That's the doc from Sydney, Don. If there's any other things you'd like to canvass while we're doing this, this is going to be the final.
I'd like to ask both segment. You boys, this is a thing that really does grate me and has for a long time, and I don't do it. Very rarely do I do it. But my son has told me, you know, when people don't answer phone calls, why don't you text? I said, what? He said, this is what they do now. Yes. Am I out by myself here? I'd rather have a conversation than text. Is this what, am I out of step?
Depends.
No, it does depend. Don, I'd rather have a conversation rather than battling the old word processor with the fingers and everything. But sometimes if you're asking people an opinion about something or you want an answer from them, it gives them a chance if you text them to consider what they'd like to say to you rather than putting them on the spot with a conversation which is
I'm talking about we ring up and we ask a question. Why have I got to text first
to make sure if they answer the phone? You know you're about to call? Is that what you're talking about?
No. Well, my son tells me he's older than you. He says people prefer texting nowadays. I don't understand.
I'll give you an example, Don. Say if I was going to ask a girl or a man, a person out for a date or a lunch or something, rather than get them on the phone and say, would you like to come out to dinner or lunch or go out to a function, that puts them on the spot and they got to think if they didn't want to come out with you, they got to think of an excuse on the spot. But if you text them, it gives them a chance to think what reply they'd like to give you and in what context.
Well, they might not reply though. And then there's the whole added excuse of, I didn't receive the text or I got lost or... It really does depend on the situation. I know I've got friends that work 9 to 5, 9 to 7, 10 to whatever it is. If I have to tell them something immediately that I might not remember down the track, you just send them a text. And if you want to talk about that later over text, you can, or you can call them, and it's sort of fresh in your mind.
Why do you ask this, Don? Have you had personal experience?
No, not at all. I try to contact people. And I was talking to my son the other day in front of the television.
He's hopeless with texts.
And he said, text the person, the man. I said, what? He said, text them and then they'll ring back. I don't understand. Why wouldn't they pick up the bloody phone when you do?
They could be busy.
Yes,
people work.
But is this the entree?
Yeah.
What happened before texting? Oh. You had to ring in, you had to make your answer.
What
you
happened
said.
Before phones? It was mail.
What happens before cars? We used to ride to the local supermarket. We didn't have supermarkets, Don. We used to go down to the bread kitchen on a horse. We've got cars now and we drive, Don. You've dragged yourself screaming and kicking into the 21st century.
No, I think there's some values that should be respected, and one of them is... Anyway.
So what about FaceTiming? Ever FaceTime?
What?
FaceTime.
Oh, yeah, I do that with my grandchildren, actually.
Do that? It's nice,
with my grandchildren.
Would you do that with an adult?
No.
Why not?
I don't. I feel embarrassed.
You can get their facial expressions talking about.
I am embarrassed to do it with an adult and don't. I do it with my grandchildren.
Jeez, that must be terrifying.
All right.
For them, you're a smart ass. Jeez, you've got to... This is a product of you, of bloody smart ass.
Oh, we've finally come to that agreement, have we?
No, I agree. If you FaceTimed your kids, you'd frighten the shit out of them, Don. That austere, clinical, bald look you give them with those vacant...
For a moment of pleasure. Look
vacant,
you,
current eyes looking eyes. At them. Look and at saying, them. What are you doing? And they'd say, hello, Gramps. So, oh, don't speak like that and get over there. You'd frighten the living crap out of them, Don.
I can't see you.
Yeah.
Look, for a moment of pleasure for you, look what you've produced.
Yeah, 5 seconds of dizziness, yeah. Someone said if you bite on a damp hanky, you can get an extra 5 seconds out of yourself. So there we are. 10 seconds of dizziness, and what have we got? We got him sitting
shit. Can I say something honestly?
Oh, no, please.
I came in last week purely just to have a coffee with you, and by chance fixed Don's phone. It was a complete accident that I was supposed to be on the podcast, and I'm thankful to everyone that was on social media that says it was really nice. And I might,
point out
that Dad, after 24 years, you were absolutely right. I was a mistake to be on this podcast and walk this earth. So I appreciate you. You are finally right.
Worried about you. Haven't you got a job?
No, he was.
Hey,
right.
Max, haven't you got a job to go to?
I do.
Well, what's your boss saying about you sitting on your ass doing a podcast?
Works different hours. Yeah. He works for Monjon. Can we say what you work for?
Yeah, a security company.
No, we can say Monjon is Johnny Moncrief, who is a very good security company.
Do you stand on the door
company.
Of hotels and bash people like the?
No,
just
I don't do. I work for a private security firm. I don't do
what
security,
they
do.
Do they do bashing of customers
well,
or patrons?
Before we get Monjon into a degree of difficulty about whether Max bashes people at the door or not, and he gets sued or the company, we'll wind this up. Max, I know you didn't come in here to want to be on it, but we thought we had good reaction to you and.
I know, it's really nice seeing you 2 times in 2 weeks. It's more I get in a year.
So you put your problems, Max, you've got right now down to your father's neglect over the years. This is a therapeutic.
As I understand it, Max, I'm seeing you on Friday, aren't I?
I know. It's
right, well,
nice,
shut
it's
up.
It's going to be twice in one
no,
week.
No, that's right.
It's progress.
That'll be about one time more than it should be. Right, now, so Don, welcome and goodbye. And Max, same to you. We're just trying to work out how we end this, and we're going to do it now.
I'm open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you.